The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. I'm here in semi-undisclosed location in Midtown Manhattan on Columbus Avenue.
Looks familiar.
Yeah, no, I show you. Yeah, real quick. here with my friend and co-host, the great Jamal Murphy. Murph, what's up?
What's up, Bill? I'm chilling in Brooklyn, you know, holding it down.
Still. And we've got a great guest, thanks to Jamal. You know what they call friend of the show, as they say. You
right.
know?
I love it.
Great NBA ref, great guy. I think now 15-year veteran now?
17.
17-year veteran, my God. 17-year veteran, the great Zach Zarba, joining us live from the bubble. I mean, this is – Zach, first of all, Zach, how are you doing?
Yes.
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me. Friend of the show, I like that. That has a good ring to it.
I learned that from this radio guy. They said friend of the show, which means friends of the show. So Zach, man, there's so much that I want to ask you, but just generally, how are you doing? How are you? How are you doing? I know that somebody told you 17 years ago all the twists and turns your career would have taken. I'm not sure if you could have imagined and dreamed up this experience. So, man, what's it like?
Right. Yeah, no, you're right. Never in a million years would you think about something like this happening. You just would never even think something like COVID would right. happen. And so it has been wild and strange. But being out here, you know, we were talking earlier, and being out here in the bubble, you know, everyone wants to know what's the bubble like, but, you know, what is it like? What is it like? And it's, you know, it's great. Besides the obvious tough part of being gone from your family and your loved ones for so long, which is that's the rough part. What they've done here at Walt Disney World in Orlando is nothing short of amazing. I'm telling you, the number of people that they have working here 24/7 and for the teams, the players, the coaches, all, you know, for all of us, all the support staff that put this together. I think someone was saying it was literally put this together in 3 months or so. For what they have here on this campus, it is unbelievable. It probably is one of the safest places on earth, or at least in the United States right now.
Yeah. Well, so what's it like? We won't get, you know, because I do want to ask you down the road, you know, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are announcing today that they're done. There's not going to be any fall sports or anything like that. I do want to ask you about that, but I want to have you. You were saying that this is incredible. What's incredible? I mean, what's it like day to day from, you know, what's it like?
Right. So it's literally like having a checklist every day that you have to get used to. I think we're about a month in now. I got here on July 12th and then we quarantined. And so you have a checklist of things that you have to do health and safety wise every day. So, for example, I wake up. First thing I have to do when I wake up is you have to take your temperature with this, the Kinza smart thermometer, and it goes into an app on your phone along with this. I believe it's a pulse oximeter, which tests your oxygen saturation. So the first thing you're doing every morning is those numbers are going into a My Health app that the NBA has created, and it's going into some database, and it's like it's digitally connected to this, you know, to your individual magic band here, which, you know,
like an ankle bracelet.
Pretty much.
We just put it on the wrist just to make it seem when you're still in the house arrest.
this is what gets you, you know, gets you in and out of access to the arenas. When you, if you don't show up green, you know, you're going to have to talk to a doctor, because mm-hmm. that means that you, there's something has been red flagged and that you're maybe at risk, or just something that they need to sort out. And that's not even mentioning just getting tested every day. You know, wow. I've been tested now 30 something straight days.
Now, which kind of test do you get?
We're getting the swab, the mouth swabs and the nasal swabs.
Oh my God. You got to get the nasal swabs every day.
It's not as invasive, I think, as some can be. And you know, it takes 5 minutes, but you know, they have the health and safety people working 18 hour days here, just for testing all the 1500 or so people, staff members that are here. And so, you know, along with, you know, we even have something like we have this proximity detector that's attached to my credential. So if I get too close to someone, if I get within 6 feet, this is going to beep.
Mm. Wow.
You know, and just to let you know, hey, you know, you might want to back up and social distance. And, yeah, the you really feel good. You know, I don't want to. It's obvious. Adam Silver and everybody running the show, you have all the faith in the world in them because they've spared no detail. But, you know, I think we have something successful going, but they don't let up. And so there's, you know, there's memos coming out. There's stuff coming out every day. If people start to slip up and stop wearing their masks, or they see people too close and getting, you know, you start to get comfortable because we've had a few weeks now of zero tests, nobody coming in a positive. And but on the health and safety, and they don't stop. They are, you know, the security people and the health and safety people are all over everybody on this campus to make sure that they're being responsible.
And there's stuff for you to do on the campus, because you hear a lot, you know, you hear things here and there about, oh, you know, people, you know, sick and tired of being in their room or obviously being without their family. But there are things for you to do. Like, you can keep yourself busy.
Yes. No, so I'll give you an example. Our ref room, they have, so we have 45 officials down here out of our 70. So 45 of the referees came down. They didn't take all 70 for health and safety reasons. They needed to condense. So they took 45 of us. And we've got a 29,000 square foot ref room where we have our meetings, where Monty McCutcheon, our boss, you know, gives us his meetings and talks to us weekly. But in that room, there's, you know, ping pong, pool, there's TVs, there's, you know, basketball hoop if guys want to shoot. You know, guys are playing pickleball out here. You know, some of the guys who are older playing pickleball out here.
And I don't know what that is.
Right. In Brooklyn, you never really knew what pickleball was in Brooklyn. They've got golf for us once a week or so. So they've, which is not as easy as it sounds, because they have to privatize the whole course, and they have to make sure you just can't golf on an open course with people, you know, with people who aren't working with the NBA, who aren't under the same testing and safety protocols as you next to you. So they have to privatize it. So the undertaking is huge, but they've obviously, you see some of the stuff the players have. They've done great with us in terms of that mental health side of when you're in a bubble, when you're away from your family and you have to perform your job. They do have things for you to kind of stay sane, so to speak.
Like, well, a couple of things you said. So there are other people out there golfing?
I mean, not who aren't a part of the NBA and who aren't part of not that day, or not those 5 to 6 hours. They, you know, the NBA privatizes or buys out that course for that period of time. So you're not coming anywhere. You're not coming close to or anywhere near someone who is not under our or in our bubble.
But I mean, that's what I'm saying. So in other words, there are some people who are vacationing or whatever, who have access to the course at some point.
At some point, yeah. So maybe, you know, if we're there from, you know, 7 a.m. until noon or something like that, our times, then maybe then they buy out the NBA will then buy out the next few hours to have this place. You have to see the sanitizing and the teams that come here and sanitize everything, you know, after you use anything is unbelievable. So they'll sanitize the golf course before and after. They'll sanitize the testing rooms before and after. The arenas, our locker rooms, You know, they have to sanitize every single thing between games and everything. The undertaking is nothing short of amazing. Yeah.
Basically, you had an off season from March to July. And I assume for the refs, it's got to be somewhat similar to the players. Like, you had to be ready. You kind of knew that you were you know, that they were going to try to make it happen, that you were going to come back. So you had to stay ready. What did you have to do to stay ready? I guess you had to stay in shape and all that.
Yeah. I don't know about you, though. But that you know, those first 4 months or first 3 months of sheltering in place, for me, it was homeschool. You know,
right,
we had to. So right. we have two boys. And ours and mine are a little older than yours, Jamal.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them 6 and 8 now. So we had the homeschool. Uh-huh. So my wife and I, I went right into the homeschooling and we kind of split it up. We were lucky enough to be able to do that where she was home and I was home. I mean, as a side note, that just showed, you know, that really our minds were blown thinking about, you know, a single family home or a parent that had to be at work trying to do this with the kids or right. someone who didn't have an iPad or a home computer or even a printer, how to keep up. That part blew our minds and it, you know, opened our minds really. That was the first 3 months doing that. And then at the same time, we did have to stay ready. So I would kind of do the morning shift of the homeschooling. And then Chris, my wife, she'd do the afternoon. In the afternoons, I would tend to my work stuff. So I would, you know, I had a Peloton, so I needed to stay in shape. They sent us, we were doing video breakdowns, videotape, 3 times a week of old games to kind of, you know, keep that frame of mind and keep that, you know, nothing's the same as being on the court with the guys and the speed and the strength and everything, but we were watching tape and doing video breakdowns 3 times a week, Zoom calls, all that stuff. So that we were staying ready, but it was longer than an off season. Usually an off season is a few months. This was 4 months, 4.5 months. And then you come back here and you have the 22 best teams in the NBA here. You don't even have the 30 and they're ready to go. And they're just, so it was just, you know, it right out of the gate, you know, with 8 games left to go. And so.
So you go through this whole thing of training, you've got in your mind, what it's going to be like. How different is it?
Right. So that's been strange. That's been, going through the walkthroughs of the arena, some of the things that they've done, you know, with these arenas, with the, you know, with the crowd noise and then piping in the virtual fans, and the way they've done this is kind of all built for TV, and kind of all made for everybody at home who right. is, you know, who most people have to, you know, we're sheltering in place. Everyone's not moving around as freely as they usually would. And so the NBA has kind of built this their game, you know, because there are no fans here for the home viewer. And so when you're out there though, that, you know, you do feel like in a way you're on in a reality TV show, you're on stage because the, you know, there's just dark everywhere and the lights are on you and there's no fans. So that part is strange. You can hear one of the funniest things for the referee is that you can now hear so many more things that the crowd might normally drown out in a rate. 20,000 fans in a playoff game in an arena that is rocking. You know, even if they're yelling at you half the time, 20,000 people drowns out, and just, you know, you now can hear. One of the stranger things for us as officials that when we talk about it is you can hear the benches a lot more. You can hear the, you know, the guys on the sidelines, and you know, we have to learn not to be so sensitive with that, you know, because a lot of it is passion and just trying to, you know, wanting to win and you know, good natured most of the time. But we've had to, you know, adjust to that because you hear everything and you're like, wait, you know, do I need to address this? Does, you know, is this going to be embarrassing or, right. you know, so that's kind of one of the things we're trying not to be too sensitive about.
The stuff that you ordinarily would hear from the fans, you hear from the bench now?
No, you know, it's different. The guys are different than the fans. The guys talk to each other. The guys right. talk to the other team. They're talking to you. They're reacting to you. You know, like they're joking sometimes. You know, you're judging all of it. Yeah, you know, in real time. And so that's taken some getting used to. But this some of the stuff you normally would not hear with 20,000 fans screaming in an arena. You know, you would not. And so
Is it like summer league?
It's like, you know, it's like a rec league game, except that we all, that I grew up refereeing, you know, in order to gain the experience necessary to get to the NBA. It's like refereeing a rec league game, except you have just the best players in the world. It's just, you just, this, you know, that, that part about it is, that's a little bit different.
So what about all the sound that they pipe in, like you said, for the TV audience? Do you hear any of that?
Yeah, you hear. So you make a call. So they'll have a home and away team. You make a call against the home team, and there might be, you might hear boos coming out of the crowd as they have that. Right. They cheer when the home team scores a basket. You know, there's a big replay thing across on the other side of the court. So they have the announcer announces differently when the home team scores a basket than when the road team. So yeah, this, the attention to detail is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
We have breaking news. The vice president, Biden's vice president, will be Kamala Harris.
Okay.
Is that right?
Okay. Yep.
Wow, this, excellent. This, okay.
This came across the wire, so.
Okay, okay.
It's excellent. On.
It's on.
Not bad. I'm not mad at that.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm not mad at that either.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she goes both ways. She locked up a lot of people, so I mean, she get, you know. Right, she said, right. Wait a minute, I'm law and order too.
That's right.
Anyway. Well, we just wanted to break in with that news flash. But Zach, two things I wanted to follow up on. What kinds of stuff, you don't have to give names, but what kind of stuff are you hearing from the bench mm-hmm. that you mm-hmm. normally didn't hear?
You'll know. You'll just hear stuff like, oh, come on, Zach. I got dance. That's, you know. You'll and
how'd you miss that, Zach?
Right, or you'll hear something like that. And that doesn't even rise to the standard of needing to do anything with it. But what the difference is that you, it's so loud now and you hear it because there's no fans and you're going, wait a second, this might be too much, you know, and it's not. And I will say this, the 22 teams, the guys, the teams that came here, they've brought it. They're not mailing it in. They're playing hard. We think the level has been high. They have not just, in my opinion, have not just come here and get it over with. They're getting after it. And maybe some of that is because this is, you know, a once in a lifetime kind of thing or twice in a lifetime kind of deal where, you know, they know they're going to be stories are going to be written about this in years to come. So they brought it.
So for you as a referee, as far as your job, what's been the difference when you're on the court, no fans? How does it affect how you call the game, if at all?
No, it doesn't affect how you call it. You miss the fans, mm-hmm. you know. The longer you're in, you start to know some of the fans around the different arenas who kind of sit around close to the court. So you miss the juice, the energy that they bring. You realize how much energy they bring when you walk into a packed arena in a playoff game or something like that. You don't have that here. You do not. You have the intensity for sure, but you don't have a major part, which is the fans. And I think everybody misses the fans. That's kind of it doesn't change how you call a game. You're not hearing more, you know, some people will say, oh, well, you know, maybe you're calling more fouls, maybe because you can hear a smack here. And that's not how we're trained to, hear something. If you don't see it, you're not going to call it. You're not supposed to. I'm not saying you never I've never heard something and called a foul because I've heard a smack, but you're not trained to do that, you know? So that might happen 1% of the time. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't change how we call a game. We call a game the same way.
But what about, since it's basically like a neutral court setting, so yep. there's no home or away team, you know, mm-hmm. people are about to get the calls at home.
Mm-hmm.
Does
mm-hmm.
it change it in that way at all?
Not in my mind. Now, I don't know right. you know, my subconscious, you know, they've done studies like that.
Touchy territory.
I couldn't tell you, you know, if you're asking me personally, that it does not change. But I would say that when I'm going to a home arena with 20,000 fans, but
right.
you know,
right.
So I don't, but then again, you know, maybe I'm being, you know, subjective to it. Who knows? So, but it doesn't, you know, the guys in here will say it doesn't change the way they call the game.
But I guess you don't miss the booze, though. I mean, and again, you've been doing this for 17 years, so I don't know if you ever get anesthetized to that, where it's like a musician's embouchure, or I don't know if you never get truly used to it, but you're absent of that. If you make a bad call or whatever, you don't hear the boo, come on, ref, get the hell, you know, right?
See, the thing is, though, the good refs know when they've missed the call, right? So the good refs, in my opinion, know when they've messed up. And so when I mess up and it's, you know, when I mess up and it's for the home team and the home crowd is cheering, if I'd known I mess up, I still have that sick feeling, you know? So it plays both ways, you know? So the boos and all, sometimes the boo, you can have 20,000 fans booing you or ref you, you know, the ref you suck, ref you suck. But when you know that the call is right, that's almost a badge of honor then, you know? So that doesn't change.
But do you miss that? The ref you suck?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
You do miss it.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
They bring an energy to the game that I think to a person in here, people would tell you that component is a huge thing that's missing.
This whole thing of fanless, this whole notion of fanless arenas, what does that mean? I've been thinking about it even more, because there's part of me that's thinking, as much as fans have been a part of the game, there's a part of me that fans have kind of gotten a little too emboldened, too entitled. Mm-hmm. You know, your price of the ticket means you'd go and be up now. You know, you've seen it, Zach. People who are normal, regular, ordinary people turn into these, like, morons, people you wouldn't even recognize inside the arena. And I'm wondering, I don't know how long this is going to last, but I'm wondering if this kind of gives people little chance of soul searching, because just like you miss them,
right?
You know, do fans miss you, and is that going to bring any kind of enlightenment?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's a great point. We've had some situations in the NBA that the league has had to handle. I think most sports have, and I think there can be some entitlement with that expensive ticket to think that they can say or do whatever they want. And I think that's the minority. That's the 0.1%. But even that in and of itself, you know, players, coaches, officials, anyone on that floor, they're people just like anybody else. And there are boundaries that they cannot cross. So when talking about the NBA, you know, we have a security briefing before every game in the locker room, and they have warning cards and ejection cards. And if we hear something untoward or that passes that standard, then, you know, we can issue an ejection. And the league security, you know, they have been on top of that in the last few years, extremely, after a few incidents we've had. So hopefully you're right, but hopefully they can kind of, you know, you do kind of realize what you're missing.
Probably not, though. <You know.
laughs> just make it that first playoff game. The next playoff game.
What about with players? Player interaction after calls. You seeing any difference there? You know, when there's a crowd full of people. You know, even when we played, if you miss a shot, you know, you're more apt to pretend you were fouled. You know, when there are more people watching. Any change in interaction?
No, you know. No, right. You always start looking at your hand. You start wiping. Oh, no, yeah, my hand is. No. They're intense. So they're bringing it, and this is a new experience, and all eyes are on us in here.
Right.
And everybody's watching, and everybody knows it, and so it's that kind of stage, and so there's an intensity to that. So, you know, to me, it would just be all of these games, most of these seeding games, these eight seeding games we've had, have been akin to playoff games in my mind. And so, you know, they're not playoff games technically, but they've had the intensity, the player intensity of a playoff game.
So do you think it could ratchet up even further? So when the playoffs start, you expect more?
Oh, we're just getting started. Oh, yes. We're just getting started. Yep, I think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be. This is the, you know, the fun and games will be over in you know, 6 days. I think playoffs start maybe in 5 to 6 days.
17th.
Yeah. So I think you'll, and the NBA has a great, there's some great new format things where they've got these play-in games really, which are playoff games technically, starting on Saturday and Sunday, you know, which will be in the Western Conference, the 8 and 9 seed. So that's something we've never seen before. And, you know, the league is innovative when it comes to that stuff, and what better year to try it, you know,
right,
than this year when teams really didn't have an 82 game season to get to that 8 spot. And so, you know, they've instituted that 8-9 play-in game. And so that'll be a little twist that could be interesting.
What do you think about the thing that's going to stick? In any of the innovations, mm-hmm. any of the new things? Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot to mm-hmm. like
yeah.
About this. Even, you know, because this is a lot like an NCAA tournament type of thing. But what are some of the things about this you would like to maybe see stay?
Yeah, I think... I think if I would watch the play-in game and see how that plays and see if you like that and see what the reaction is, you know, across the country to that kind of 8-9 play-in game. I'd watch that. I also think from the referee side, everyone's been talking about the crew chief being mic'd and being able to explain their review to the table, and then it goes to live television. So if you've watched any of the games, you can see that when there's a coach's challenge now or a review, the crew chief will come over, he's reviewing the play, and then he has to push the talk button and his microphone, then he goes live. You know, he goes right. live in front of the country, similar to an NFL white hat a little bit,
right.
except yeah. he's not doing it to arena. So we've gotten a lot of positive feedback about that, you know, hearing the actual official's explanation to yeah. the decision. So that may, you know, we'll see.
Well, I saw. I think last night's broadcast, one of the broadcasters was poking fun at you, saying that you were trying to take his job because right. you were explaining it and looking right into the camera. Are you not supposed to look into the camera?
So that was that, right? That was Jared Greenberg, right. a friend of mine and sideline reporter, TNT, and right. So this is the thing; these are the little twists that come out of it. Is that some referees? So you. You're looking through, imagine this big plexiglass, because the scores table is not like your normal scores table. There's like a 9 to 10 foot high plexiglass encasement to protect people, to protect us, to protect them. And so, you know, I have a microphone. I can talk to them through the plexiglass. They have a microphone that pokes out and they can talk to me, you know, to communicate. But then when the review comes, I have to press and I have to talk. And then there's a camera. And so what I was doing was finding the camera. I'm looking right. so
you're
I'm
a pro.
Straight at the I'm looking straight at the camera. And I the guy, you know, coworker, you know, my fellow staff members, the other refs were killing me. Like right. just, you know, I think Reggie Miller said I was going Zoolander, but I'm just looking into the camera. And so this is like some of those self-critiques that you have. Like, it's not for us, it's not just the calls, not just the block charge, the out of bounds. You're always looking at how you are looked on the court, how you're perceived. What are your mannerisms? Do your mannerisms incite people? Are you a de-escalator? You know, all these nonverbal communication things that are going to help you in your career. This is one of those things where you're like, all right, how does this look? And I think, so last night I made the change where I'm no longer looking into your soul.
Right.
I am now talking to the PA announcer, right? Which is what I would normally do, which is what I should be telling him what the decision is. He is then going to announce it to the fans. And at the same time, TV can hear and see what I'm saying.
So, and you're pretending, you're pretending the camera's not there now.
But you know, it's so correct. Funny. You said something a while back. And I just think that when you talked about going into the arena, because I think guys haven't really got hip to this. This is a whole level of theater and showmanship. They thought it was back pre-COVID, you know, but now right. I think that, like you mentioned, this is actually reality TV. Right. It's in a studio. Right. You're in the studio now.
Yeah.
And yeah. although there are no, you know, I remember... You know, you've done TV shows and all that kind of stuff, and there's nobody in the studio except you, but there are millions of people watching.
Right.
You know, you stare down the barrel of that camera, and, you yep. know, you're talking to millions of people. And I yep. think guys have not quite got it yet. Man, you are on stage. You literally are on stage
yeah.
now. Right. And I think it the is. People who get it, who are like, mm-hmm. more like we're teasing you, about looking at the camera, but that's the reality. You kind of are on stage.
Yeah, no. Yeah, there's no question about it. It is reality TV. I think sports is it's like sports is almost the last kind of appointment television where you can't really DVR the NBA finals, right? Right. I mean, the NBA finals start at 9 o'clock. You know, if you're 15 minutes late and you have a DVR and you can catch up, but you can't talk to anybody because everybody's talking about it. And so you can't watch the NBA finals the next day, right? If you miss it, everybody's talking about it. You can't get away from it. And so you know what happened. And so that's the kind of the beauty of it, that reality in the moment kind of thing. So, yeah, I understand.
As far as safety,
mm-hmm.
going back to what you said earlier, all the precautions being taken, you obviously feel, you know, very comfortable, you know, one of the safest places on earth. So I guess you do feel confident that this experiment will work through, you know, we will have a champion.
Yeah. I do. Being here, you know, when you think about it, you know, as you're preparing to travel here and go through it, you know, in the weeks before, you're saying, boy, I don't know. I hope this can work. You know, we all hope it can work. We all want to do our part to make it work. But, you know, there's a level of unknown where you're not sure, you know, and I think being here for this month now, I think most people in here can see that it is working and that it was planned and thought out extremely well. Just by all the attention to detail and the people who are working 24/7. So I am super optimistic, but also, I think we want to do our part and make sure that we're responsible, because if you're not responsible, and you're not wearing your mask and you're not social distancing and you're not doing these things, you know, we know how quick it can tumble, crash down.
So along those lines, are there any lessons when you look at what's going on in other sports or the rest of the country, yeah. any lessons you think can be learned from what the NBA is doing that other parts of society can learn from?
Yeah. I don't want to talk about the other sports because they have some complexities. Baseball and football have complexities that the NBA doesn't have with their traveling parties and the number of players on a team. So they have other situations. They have things they have to work out, you know. As far as the NBA's bubble, though, I think the NBA's bubble has been proven over this first month to have worked so far. And so I think other leagues are taking note of that. It's difficult to, you know, it's difficult in this day and age to have teams in market, you know, and players going home and going to restaurants and, you know, without containing people in one safe, secure area. Well, the NBA was kind of fortunate enough, 80% of our season was complete on March 12th. And so we just had the last 20 in the playoffs. But we also had to plan this, or not, we, you know, Adam and everybody had to plan this in the moment, which, you know, during that hiatus. So that was difficult too. The bubble, I think the bubble is a lesson on safety and you know, for other sports and for the country responsibility, really.
Yeah, I think Zach, you know, you look at hockey doing it in the bubble, and mm-hmm. it's working. I mean, honestly, I think that's really the only way to do it. And that bubble that what comes to what you guys are doing is a great sacrifice. I mean, you have to be prepared to make an unbelievable sacrifice. But I think, you know, I went to a baseball one day just to see as a journalist. To see what it was like. I mean, I wasn't gonna go down there, but you know, that's another story. When I was 42, I go to Orlando. You know, when I was 40 years old, I go to Orlando and be right. there for 5 months. But now I said, you know what?
Right.
I'll be a free state. But the point though is that what you guys are doing is a tremendous sacrifice to make it work.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Just got another thing came over the wire about the Pac-12. They're canceling all fall sports too. What do you think? I mean, you have younger boys, but mm-hmm. if you could just kind of project, if your kids are, you know, they may be, you know, 19, 20, as a parent, what are you thinking?
I think you can never go wrong with health and safety and erring on the side of health and safety. As a parent, you know, that's what we want to do. You err on the side of health and safety until, you know, I think we don't know. There's so much about this disease that we don't know. And still, I think the rush to open up, the rush to do this, the rush to do that without really knowing everything is dangerous.
Before we let you go.
We're going to keep it for another hour. Where are you going, Jack?
he probably has a game. But part of this whole NBA restart obviously has had to do with, you know, social justice, racial justice, protests or demonstrations. You were part of that. You ref the first game in the bubble, I think. Mm-hmm. And where everybody took a knee, including referees, you know, everybody on the court took a knee. And I was just wondering, you know, what went into that decision as far as the referees are concerned, as far mm-hmm. as you personally, and, you know, what does the whole movement, you know, mean to you?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that, because I wanted to briefly talk about that. I think there's a lot of fun stuff in the bubble. There's a lot of things, but I don't want it to get misconstrued that there is a serious tone in here. There is there's a seriousness to kind of an acknowledgement about what's going on in the country from inside here, that we understand that this is the NBA bubble and this does not really represent what's going on in the country and the seriousness of everything that's going on. And so there is a real vibe and a real tone in here that understands the seriousness of the, you know, what's going on out in the world. And so that first night and every night since then, you know, proud, I think is how I would describe being able to kind of be a part of that. And it emanates from our players. It emanates, you know, from the way that they speak out, and really our younger generation, I think through this whole movement right now has shown stamina and energy that is impressive, you know, for older people like us to see what they've been able to do and the force that they have and their voices. I think it's great. I think from the referees, I think, you know, we feel the same way. I mean, and with referees, we might span four different generations on our staff. So we have referees who are 60 years old who have seen some things in their life, mm-hmm. you know, and when we met and discussed these kind of things, guys spoke their truth. And it was eye opening. The more you listen to people, the more I listen to people and learn, you realize how much you don't know or how much I don't know. And so proud is the word. And also we're going to support all of our referees. We're going to support their truth, whatever they feel in their heart they want to do on the anthem. And whether that's kneeling or standing, I chose to kneel. I choose to kneel. And that's my decision. But proud is the word. And there's a real feeling of using this platform here, whether you're a player, a coach, or an official, to express yourself in that way. Because I think that's where we are today in the world, where you have to, if you don't, you know, if you can't speak out or you feel like you're not going to speak out, you know, you are almost giving consent to some of the inequities and social injustices that occur. So.
Now, let me ask you this before we let you go, but about the anthem, I wrote a column. Yep. I've felt like this for a long time. Of just getting rid of the national anthem, because it's become such a flashpoint. You know, mm-hmm. it's supposed to be a thing. We're all in this together, all in one flag. But like everything else in the past few years, every single thing has become divisive. Even, you know, should this conference play? You've got the president saying canceling football would be stupid. And, you know, everything. So I'm wondering... Right. How you would feel if there just wasn't a national anthem? You come out, you warm up, you play maybe the Funkadelics, right. One Nation Under a Groove, you know, and then you play ball.
Right. I don't know. I haven't thought about that. I haven't thought much about what it would be like to eliminate the anthem or not. I do feel like, you know, as a society, if we can have empathy, and I think to me that's the key. If me and you disagree, Bill, or me and you disagree, Jamal, if we can disagree, but at least I can understand your point, even if I don't agree with it, I think that, to me, that's the key. The empathy to understand where someone's coming from, even if you don't agree with them, is what we're lacking right now, you know? from the top on down. And that's the divisiveness, and that's some of the stuff. But I've never thought about the anthem. It is, to your point, it is right now a divisive, it is a flashpoint in our country. So I haven't thought about, much other than that.
Yeah. I guess with the great Zach Jarvis, friend of the program, one of the great guys industry, and not just because he's been on our show a few times, but because Zach, you really are just a really, truly, just a really, really nice guy, solid guy. You're fair. And I was like, what are the officials supposed to be about, sort of.
So keep looking in that camera, Zach.
Zach, don't let him talk you out of that. Do not let him talk you out of that. This is show business, brother. Seriously. Don't.
All right. I'll think about it. I will. You'll see it next time. I'll see what I do next time.
Do like this next time. Get away. Get the fingers.
Yeah. Give me some sign language or something.
We're going to send you a bros pod. We're going to send you a bros pod button to put like on the thing. We'll pay you for it.
I love you guys, man. Keep up the good work. It's great to be with you.
You too. Thanks a lot, Zach.
Yeah. Sorry about this, man. I don't know. I'm in the ABC office. So I don't know.
They got to step their internet game up.
Yeah, I know. I should go back to the church.
Let's talk a little bit about college football. Like you said, the Big Ten, Pac-12 cancel all four sports, including football. We had heard yesterday that was the rumor that they were going to do that today.
And now we're waiting for the swing. Well, the SEC is going to do. They're going to have them put people out there. Shit, it could be the bubonic plague,
right?
And they'll have these guys playing. But the Big 12, we don't know what the Big 12 is going to do. Well, what do you think, man? I mean, again, as a sports person, but as a parent and all that, I mean, what do you think about these cancellations of seasons? Because they've already, they've done it at Division 2 and 3.
Right.
So what's the deal? If 2 and 3 do it, what do you think?
I mean, like you said, when Divisions 2 and 3 did it, I mean, it basically just shined a light on what was going on here. I mean, it's the same. I mean, you're dealing with kids, students, and it's all about trying to protect, for Division 2 and 3, it was about trying to protect them from the virus, protect everybody from the virus, because, you bring people together, you travel, you play games against each other, the disease will spread. But like you said, Division 1 holding out, and there's only one reason for it, and that's money, obviously. So to me, it's really shined a light on that, on how much money that these kids bring these institutions. You can't even hide it anymore because of the pandemic. So I'm kind of pleasantly surprised that the Big Ten and Pac-12 did this, because I expected that they would see them try to plow through and do whatever they could to still get this money. So I was a cynic. I admit that, but I'm pleasantly surprised that these two leagues actually did the right thing.
I'm with you. Not at all. Yeah, I felt the same way. I was like, oh, wow, really? So I heard Gene Smith, the AD at Ohio State, maybe a week or so ago. And what he was saying was very, very curious, because he was not gung-ho. In fact, he was almost kind of warning people that this may happen. It seems to me, Jamal, it's so clear that people still get sick.
Right.
That you could almost, but look at the NFL. The NFL's still trying to make it happen.
Oh.
They're still trying to make it. How do we make this happen? And honestly, I don't know if you and I talked about this, but the bubble is the thing. And if they could establish the thing where there's a bubble, like on the West Coast, there's a bubble in the South, there's a bubble on the East Coast. In other words, you have three bubbles.
Right.
But players and everybody, they with the NBA and hockey, they've got to commit that we're going to be in this bubble for 3 months.
No, yeah, and we did. We did talk about this last week, and you brought that up, and you talked about, three, four bubbles for these sports. And
I'm sorry about that.
The interesting thing is that only it's still only the NBA talking about that, because the NBA came out and talked to reporters a couple of days ago saying they're talking about their plans for next season, which involve not one bubble like it is now, but multiple regional bubbles. So yeah. The NBA continues to think about this in the right terms. This is what the NFL and Major League Baseball need to be talking about right now. I understand, you know, the leagues are bigger. There are more players on each team. So maybe one bubble wouldn't work for everybody. But you need to at least create multiple safe places where, like you said, they can't go back home and they can't go back to the nightclub and all this other stuff. They must be tested rigorously. You need to give them all that technology that the NBA is using with the watch and everything. The difference between these pro leagues and the college leagues is that the pro leagues, the players are benefiting. They're actually getting paid to do this, whereas college players, I mean, you're just a peg in the billion-dollar NCAA machine. Right. Whatever you're doing is for the NCAA.
Right, and it was cool. And you hit it on the head, man, just a couple minutes ago when you said this pandemic has made this. It has made it so crystal clear.
Right.
The exploitation.
Right.
It has made it so crystal clear. Just like the pandemic has made social inequities so crystal clear.
Right.
About people who have, who super have, who even have more than that, and then people who just kind of barely making it. So,
right. And yeah, it's completely wiped away the illusion of college sports being amateur sports. Like that, that's completely done. You can't even pretend like that's the case anymore. I mean, look at what you're talking about when these leagues shut down for a season. Now, individual universities are worried if they can just pay their normal bills. You're talking about the economy in each town, you know, during the football season. I mean, yeah. It's like you're crushing these economies, you know? So I just hope that these players recognize the power. If anything, now you should recognize the power that you have, and that so many people are dependent on you playing this sport for free.
The problem that you've got these Dabo Swinney types, Nick Saban types. You've got these mostly white men with support from these mostly white boosters. It's a whole power dynamic intimidating these mostly young black men and their families.
Right.
It's a whole intimidation thing, and are you going to be a troublemaker? Or are you going to come along with it? Right, you know, the whole
sell you a dream. Mind. You know, what 2% of these guys make the pros? You know, go on to actually make money in the pros. So anyway, and part of the dream that they sell is like, you know, we want you to play, but you're doing it for yourself because you're getting exposure, and you could become a pro. But we're only talking about 2% actually have a real shot at that. So 98% are being fed a dream.
Right. Then it's all you get an education coach. You say, I can't be a history major. I can't be prepared.
Right.
You know, all I can do is be a communications major.
Right.
They end up like Roden and Jamal.
Right.
What else are we missing?
Biden, which I didn't see that. Biden made his pick. It's official. Kamala Harris.
Kamala Harris.
How do you feel about that? Bison. Yeah, that's big. How do you feel about that? Safe pick?
Yeah, well, it's clearly a safe pick. Any pick that he made was going to be wrong, or it was going to be attacked.
Right.
So I'm sure the attacks of our, I saw some flash out. I'm sure the POTUS 45 had an attack for whomever he picked. You know, they had an attack for whoever he picked.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kamala, you know, went to HBCU, went to Howard.
Right.
She put some people away. She put some people in prison.
Right.
So she could say, well, listen, I'm in the law. I'm for law and order, too. What do you think? As an attorney.
I think it was a safe pick. I don't really know 100% how I feel about Kamala. But I think, you know, she's a politician. You would have problems with anybody. You know, all these politicians have certain things you'll disagree with. But I do think I'm happy that it was that Biden picked a black woman as a vice president. I wasn't one of those people yelling beforehand that it had to be a black woman, because really I think that they messed up from the beginning, putting him in that box, saying, right. saying, oh, I'm going to pick a woman. Right. It would have looked a lot better if you just picked a woman without saying anything, right. you know?
Exactly. So in other words, right. You say it among yourself.
Right.
We're going to pick a woman, but right. leave it open.
Yeah, leave it open. Like, you know, because now people say, oh, well, he said he was going to pick a woman. He picked a woman. And, you know, she may not be qualified, but this is...
Right.
I was thinking about it. It's like the most American thing ever, right? For it to be done like that. Like, okay, now I'm telling you ahead of time, we'll pick a woman. Right. Okay, yeah, we all know right. we should have had a woman, you know, 15 years ago, but... This year, I'll pick a woman. So when you pick the woman, now it's like, oh, well, he had to do it. You know, taking away, like, the real qualifications that all these women right. have. You know what I'm right. saying? And it was like, to me, it's like the most American thing. You right, do the right thing, but you don't. But not really.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, you could have just said, we're going to pick the best person.
Right.
But then, I guess, practically, you'd be interviewing all these fools who you know you have no shot at all. You know, right. you tell a white guy, listen, you know, Jack, you ain't got a shot. Just, you know what? It would be the reverse of the Rooney rule. It would be the reverse. All the white men would be like, right. you know, you got no shot at this, right? I'm just doing it so I can check the box.
Right, right, right. Well, you know, yeah. maybe able to help you down the line later.
Yeah, yeah. But so now, you know, now the thing is set and we'll see. I just want to see, Jamal, if these brothers, I mean, you talk about, You know, I have a sister at the WNBA. I put T-shirts to oust Kelly. Was it Loeffler?
Yep.
They have T-shirts for her opponent. I wondered if these brothers, since the NBA is so liberal, can some brother want to say put on their jersey Biden Harris?
We'll see. I think a player should try it. I mean, I'm sure there are players out there who plan on voting for Biden Harris.
But if,
right. I think the Harris, the inclusion of Harris may mobilize some people to do that. It makes the ticket look, you know, people have been saying this, but you know, like America, you know, it's not just two old white guys for once. We have diversity on the ticket. And I think for younger people, it will help mobilize the younger people seeing a black woman as VP and maybe force the type of promotion you're talking about.
Yeah, then she's an AKA.
Right.
So
Howard, like you said.
What that means, I don't know.
Do you think there's something to it, you know, symbolically? I know the kneeling and stuff, you know, you said, you know, I'm tired of that. You know, I want real change. Do you think just having a black woman as the running mate means anything? Or means as much as people are making it out to be?
Well, I don't know what people are saying, but that's real.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to the extent that the vice president is important, you know, but it's an elected position, you're running for president of the United States, and that's real. And here's your running mate, who's this black woman. That's real. I mean, you did a Shirley Chisholm who ran for president, so it's not totally unprecedented. But I think that it's also going to smoke out. I may clarify, particularly this month, we celebrate the passing of the amendment to giving women the...
Suffrage.
Yeah, suffrage. I think it's symbolic, but I think it's also going to force white women to either publicly, like you're saying, this whole thing of 2020 has been about bringing truth to light.
Right.
You know, 2020 vision. This has been about bringing truth to light, whether it's the NCAA, college players being exploited, whether it's the disparity of wealth, the wealth and income gap, and now this whole longstanding feud between white and black women, which is so shellacked by racism.
Right.
I think that's going to force women. So are you down with women or are you not? Or are you just down with white women? Okay? If you're down, and I think, of course, that ultimately benefits black men too, because we're their nephews and sons and husbands. But
right.
I think it's going to really force white women to say, okay, listen, we either down with this whole thing about women moving forward, or we're not. You know, so I'm looking forward to that. Like, yes, it's I guess it's really a dynamic time to be a journalist. It's you know, I just, this is great theater, but to your point, I think this is slightly beyond symbolism.
Right.
I mean, the kneeling is, what's that?
Right.
You know, right. But I just want to see if they're going to wear, here's the difference. I want to see if they're going to wear Biden Harris t-shirts. And when the NBA says, no, you can't do it, that's going to be protest.
Right. See,
that's where the protest began. You know, because the NBA said, okay, y'all can kneel, but everybody was going to kneel, you know, raising their fist up, you know, because they've been given permission. But when, but what happened when I want to wear, you know, like Jimmy Butler wanted to wear a jersey with no name? And now, man, you know, that's too much like Invisible Man. You can't, you know, that's too deep. So what happened was somebody said, I want to wear Biden Harris. And Adam Silver said, well, I don't know, you know. Right. And then they said, you know what, I'm going to wear it anyway. And, you know, well, you can't play. Well, you know what? The whole team was going to wear it. We can't play. So.
I like it. On that note, that's a good way to end it right there. I would love to see that.
Are you going to wear your
Biden Harris? Yeah, I'll wear it. I'll try to find one and wear it on the next podcast.
All right, listen, another great version. Thanks to the great Zach Zarba, NBA ref, 17 years. Great interview, great get. And Jamal, great as usual. You know, thanks for your contribution from Brooklyn. And I hope everybody there is staying safe and, you know, sound. And we'll join everybody next week for another scintillating version of Bill Roden. And congratulations, Kamala Harris, Howard Bison, a.k.a. All of you, a.k.a. And listen, even if you're a Delta.
You got to go. We got to stick together at this point.
Yeah, you got
to bring it all together.
This ain't the point to be feuding. Yeah, you know, even if you're a Zeta.
Right. As always, go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe to the show, write a review, give us 5 stars, tell us what you like, and we'll talk about it on air.
Take care, everybody. God bless.
Is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.